What's good and welcome to the Hockey Mailbag, the first sports podcast run by you, the listeners. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and each episode follows a simple format. You send me whatever hockey-related questions are on your mind, and I provide the answers. If you want to be a part of the podcast, just send your questions to hockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. All right, we're in the studio on the heels of a dramatic kickoff to the Four Nations Tournament as Canada takes down Sweden in OT on Wednesday night. And see, just like I said, this tournament was always destined to be a rousing success. Mitch Marner gets it done in the clutch as always. All things that I legitimately thought several days ago. Maybe not quite. But as you can imagine, the Four Nations Tournament is the majority focus for the episode here today. Obviously, not too many questions about Canada-Sweden, as well, it just ended about 20 minutes ago. But nonetheless, we'll dive right on in. Plenty of focus towards the U.S. And then a few NHL regular season, trade deadline questions, all that good stuff here. So let's get right into it here. And the question master himself is back. Broadcaster Tyson Rewicki is here. Good to have you back, Tyce. I guess to keep you on your toes, let me switch things up quickly here.
Uh-oh.
And let me ask you a question.
Okay. I'm the answer master now.
Okay. Hey, easy there. But are we feeling better or worse about the tourney after the OT win for Canada over Sweden?
Oh, much better. I would say I was a pretty big critic of the tournament going into it. I just didn't think, you know, like a lot of people, I just didn't know what the guys' motivations would be for the tournament, right? Like in the middle of the season. But hey, there were some big hits being thrown, and not too often you get to see McDavid get just ragdolled by Rasmus Dahlin there. Like that was a nice little snarl in this one. It was much, much better than I expected.
I would agree. I would agree with that, Tyson. I was pretty impressed by it. And I mean, how cool was it the tournament gets kicked off with McDavid to Crosby to McKinnon to the highlight reel back of the net? I mean, like there's that part of it. You kind of wonder, ooh, maybe the NHL's just going to get lucky with this. But the game itself was awesome. Erik Karlsson turned back the clock. He looked fantastic, and he might have been the best player in the game, honestly, even though he was unable to stop Mitch Marner on the OT winning goal there. But I was pleasantly surprised by that. So I think we might be off to a better start than maybe a lot of us might have anticipated. If you were down at it like me, well, you know what, maybe this will be a bit of a win for the NHL here. Yeah, quickly go ahead.
I don't think the refs will give Canada another power play the rest of the tournament, because it's just an automatic goal. Like it's gotta be a pretty blatant penalty now at this point.
It might be prison rules here on out. Well, we'll see what happens on the Saturday nighter against Team USA in their, well, maybe first of two matches in this tournament here. So we'll see what happens as it moves along. But let's get to the questions here, Tyson. That's what you guys are here for, and that's what we will deliver. So who is starting this off today, and what is the question?
Starting us off is from the center of North America, Winnipeg. And Winnipeg says, which player has the most to gain / lose at the tournament?
And this is any country, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Doesn't specify, but yeah. Let's say yeah.
Well, I wonder if Winnipeg is trying to sway me into a certain direction here. I thought about Austin Matthews maybe, but I really do think that it's an obvious answer, and it's not just because of the username that was thrown out there. But I think it's got to be Connor Hellebuyck, Tyson, and everybody listening. You know, you look at Team Canada, and I mean, maybe McDavid would be the one guy there where he just, like, so many guys on that team have won a Stanley Cup or have won a gold medal before. McDavid's maybe one of the few who is both accomplished but yet to have won a major. So you can maybe say him, but it's like, what does he have to prove at this point, right? Like, he's the consensus best player on the planet since he was 19 years old. And then you look at Sweden and Finland, and nothing really jumps out to me in a big way there. But despite his prolific success over the past several seasons, you know, Connor Hellebuyck has to shed the label of, is he just a regular season goalie? It's been a long time since he's had some, I guess, sustained playoff success, right? And that's where I kind of go to, like, is it Hellebuyck? Is it Austin Matthews? Maybe Mitch Marner? Maybe not anymore. But like those guys, right? Where it's been great success, regular season, playoffs, a little bit less than that. But the reason I say that is this. If Hellebuyck comes in, and USA doesn't even have to win the tournament necessarily, but if he comes in and it's Vezina, Connor Hellebuyck, ends up with a 930 save percentage, he looks great, a lot of those questions are answered. That really puts the Winnipeg Jets in one hell of a great spot heading into the stretch run and then the postseason, where it's like, oh, we got our guy back. And yeah, good luck stopping him. It's good vibes the rest of the way through. But if he has a clunker or two, you just wonder. And I know these guys are high-level athletes and they can compartmentalize, and you know, mentally they're just unbothered by things that us mere mortals could really only dream of. But you just wonder a little bit if that seed of doubt is planted just a little bit, right? And maybe it's only 2-3% of a drop in play for Hellebuyck and the Jets, right? But it's going to be there, and then there's going to need to be an elevated performance. And you just wonder if that could potentially derail what's shaping up to be a magical season over there in Winnipeg right now. So I think I will confidently go with Connor Hellebuyck having the most to gain or lose at this tournament. It's pretty shocking, too, that in the last two playoffs, in games 2-5, 0-8. With the goals against, looking like he's Darren Pang in the 1980s for Chicago. It's not the numbers you want to see from a Vezina guy there, so we'll put it that way. We'll see what Hellebuyck and the rest of the U.S. can come up with in a pretty pivotal tournament for the country and some of the players there as well. Next up on the list, Tyson, who do we got?
Well, first of all, you leave Darren Pang out of this.
That was a low blow. I'm sorry. that was a low blow, Panger. Even for a guy that small, it's just the lowest of low. I'll stop there. But yeah, go ahead.
This next question comes from Donnie Boy, and I'm sure that there was a couple people who were hoping that you'd pick Austin Matthews for that last question. But don't worry, we got awesome Austin Matthews right here. Should the Leafs be concerned if Matthews pulls a no-show at the Four Nations tournament?
I don't know why I'm laughing. No, it's a good question. Yeah. You could make a case that Austin Matthews, I think he would have the most to gain, though. I don't think he necessarily has the most to lose, if that makes sense. That's why, kind of why maybe I put Hellebuyck over him. But if, I guess, let's say for argument's sake, Team USA flames out before the final and he ends up with maybe a couple points in four games. Is that a reason for concern? Yeah. Yeah. I can't pretend like it wouldn't be. Because I feel like Mitch Marner, not by his own doing necessarily, has taken on a tremendous proportion of the blame for the Maple Leafs failures in their playoff runs or lack of playoff runs these past few years. But maybe not a lot goes to the fact that the NHL's best goal scorer of the last four or five seasons really only shows up for a couple games each series. You know what I mean? Kind of forget too that he's 6'3", 230. Like, he's a tank, and you know, the physical play isn't at the level it needs to be for somebody like him. I 100% think if he kind of comes out with a whimper and the U.S. failed to meet expectations in this tournament, that they can look at it and be like, what do we do to get him over the hump and to get us over the hump here? The crazy thing with that, too, though, is this. If he does struggle and he doesn't play well in the tournament and then he doesn't play well in the postseason, what do you do? You trade him for 40 cents on the dollar? And I'm not talking Canadian conversion rate, but like you're almost stuck in this bizarre spot here where you need to find a way to coax the most out of Austin Matthews, because a trade, I just can't imagine a scenario where you're getting anywhere near equal value back for that. especially at a premium position like center. Yeah, I think Leafs fans need to hope that, hey, at the very least, maybe not dominate this tournament, but like 4 points in four games, yeah, we can handle that, right? And then we move on. We try to slay some of those other demons there. But it is an interesting conundrum that the Leafs find themselves in, where they can certainly move past Mitch Marner and John Tavares if they'd like, but it does feel like they're wedded, for better or worse, with Austin Matthews. And I would agree with anybody that holds the sentiment that one of the most talented players on the planet needs to have a statement playoff series coming up sometime soon, maybe even this season. And we move on here. A couple more Four Nations questions, I believe. Tice, what's up next?
This one comes from @Freebird78, one of the best goal songs of all time. But now that all the lineups are out, who is the biggest snub across all four teams?
Oh, Tage Thompson. Mark Scheifele should have been on Team Canada. But it's Tage Thompson. Scheifele's been great. I mean, you could maybe make the case Sam Bennett getting in over Scheifele was a little bit egregious. But I just don't, when you look at some of the guys that Team USA picked ahead of him, there's that aspect alone where, has anybody at the U.S. national hockey team watched Chris Kreider play this season? And on what planet are you taking him over Tage Thompson? Like, there's that part of it, let alone some of the other guys that got in ahead of him there. But I've always found it odd and interesting that teams get put in these situations in international tournaments, and they put this major emphasis on role players filling out their last couple of roster spots. I'm not even talking just fourth line guys alone, but it's like even the healthy scratches need to be intangible filled, gritty, will play the penalty, like things like that. But there's never what if our top guns aren't scoring? Like, what do we do at that point if we need to find a way to give the offense a bit of a spark, right? And it's not going to come from a guy that, you know, averages 50 points a season. But, like, to have the wild card that is a 6'7" unicorn that can go through basically anybody on the planet, like Tage Thompson, and you get him out of Buffalo? Maybe that's the main thing here. He's out of Buffalo. Watch him blossom. I wonder a little bit. I don't necessarily have the same concerns with Canada because their forward group, it's just so, so loaded, especially down the middle there, that I think they're ultimately going to find scoring all over the place. But I just wonder a little bit with Team USA that this has been their downfall in past tournaments, that they haven't necessarily gotten some of that supplementary scoring. Tage Thompson, at least, at the very least, he gives you a different dimension. But I think he was worthy of selection. And I think there was two or three guys that he should have been picked ahead of, let alone just one or two. So Tage, for me, I thought it at the time, and that has only been strengthened since then. But thanks for the question there, Freebird. Next up.
This next one comes via email, and it comes from a concerned goalie dad. Broder Luongo. What's happened to all the Canadian elite goaltenders? How come there's none left?
Yes. I know this is a predominantly American audience here, but this has become maybe the biggest topic in all of Canada over the last several years. I'm not just talking sports, but just anything. Where have all the good goalies gone? I believe that was a Sam Roberts song, actually. It's interesting. So, I mean, this is going to be tough to boil down into like 2 minutes here, because this could literally be a dissertation topic that you could hand into your professor and write a thesis paper on. You could do a 10-part series of a podcast as to how Canadian goaltending is not at the elite level that it was even 6-7 years ago when Carey Price held the mantle over pretty much everybody else on the planet. So to distill it all down here, there's a few things I would say about this. Everybody likes to make the argument that we'll call it amateur sports, minor hockey, whatever the terminology is, but that it's become too specialized, too focused on winning, too competitive, and too expensive. I 1,000% agree with all of those points. But that doesn't answer the question as to why there is no elite-level goaltender in Canada these days. Because those same hurdles and obstacles haven't prevented the McDavids, the McKinnons, the McCars, the Celebrinis that go on and on and on from making a big impact and kind of supplementing the next generation of talent there. And you can say the same with the States, right? I mean, like the U.S. and Canada have pretty similar, I would say, problems within their hockey development programs. Yet both of those teams continue to churn out high-end talent all over the place. But the Americans have 3-4 elite-level NHL goalies. Canada has one. So I don't know if that's necessarily the main issue that we're looking at here. I do wonder if it is the least fun description in terms of why things are the way they are in sports. I wonder if a lot of it is just luck. It might just be a bad 5-year stretch for goalies in Canada. It's not a fun explanation. It just doesn't make me sound like a Mensa member. But could it just be that simple? Where it was fine when Carey Price was winning the Vezina and a Hart Trophy. But it's just maybe a so-so batch of goalies have come up after that. And you wonder, too, you know, if Carter Hart lived up to some of his promise and pedigree, would this be a – and obviously that's not even an option for Canada anymore. But there's some things that I kind of wonder if it's a little more outside of Canada's control than people would maybe like to give it credit for. The one thing I would say more than anything else, though, as to why – Canada hasn't developed or produced an elite goalie in quite some time. They've produced a lot of solid goalies. Maybe the most out of any country, to be honest. Like, just good goalies in the NHL, but nobody that's high-end, all-star, elite-level type. I despise the way goalies in Canada are being taught the position these days. It is all about technique. It is all about blocking the puck. Let's remove any semblance of uniqueness and flair and creativity and excitement from the position. And it's angles, 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 butterfly, VH, don't stand up, must go down. Every shot's the same. Like, it's so robotic to the point that I wonder if you're just taking out some of the elements that make some of those all-time goalies truly great, which is they all had unique playing styles. Everybody seems like it's the same cookie-cutter goalie nowadays. So it's kind of a long-winded way of me saying it's not one specific issue per se, but I wouldn't mind seeing Canada attack this the way that we've seen other countries try to develop high-end talent, and that's hire a guy that knows his ish, and he becomes essentially the czar of Canada goaltending. And you create a program from 6 years old all the way up until they're 18. And it is instructed and consistent and displayed throughout the entire country. And that's the way that you go about developing the goaltender position. Because it is different than the other ones, obviously, you know, for clear reasons there. But those would be my main points as to why it is the way it is right now. I don't think it's as dire as other people make it out to be, but I do think that there are some significant shortcomings that Hockey Canada needs to and should and hopefully will get over to get back to, like you said, concern hockey dad, the Brodeurs, the Luongos, the Prices, etc.
Well, and it does seem like at least in recent years that the Canadian prospect goalie pool has been getting a little bit stronger, like Jack Ivankovic, Carter George, Carson Bjarnason, and then Gabriel Dagg, another one who's a draft eligible prospect this year. So maybe it's on the up and up now.
All it takes is one or two. That's the thing. Like Canada, there's a lot of good goalies. The other thing is just the price of equipment is just insane. I mean, yeah. Good God. Like I got a little guy with maybe a minor hockey future, I should say, on the way. And it's just like, please, God, do not let him be a goalie. Of please, please do not let him go down that dark, dark path. Or else we'll be doing an episode every single day and maybe on weekends too. Like it's gonna get desperate times if he puts on the pads. Let's move on, please. Let's move on quickly. What's next?
Next comes from, oh, I can't read that name, but would Russia or the Czechs be better than Finland if they were in this tourney?
Ah, okay. So in addition to the four nations, or who is the fourth best nation maybe? I guess that might be the thing there. I mean, I think the easy one is the Czechs are still, I would like out of the big six, if you want to call them that. I would have the Czechs at sixth and pretty comfortably so. They're solid, but still not enough high-end talent down the middle and on the blue line there. I almost wonder a little bit if, this sounds bizarre to say, but like, would you almost maybe think about taking Switzerland or Germany ahead of the Czechs? I don't know. It's the reason I say Germany specific. Germany's kind of getting slept on a little bit, but like you talk about high-end talent. And to go Draisaitl up front there, and then Moritz Seider, who I think is a superstar waiting to explode in Detroit. Grubauer and Net. Oh, wait, I said superstars. Never mind. but they've got high-end talent with Germany. And Switzerland always just, they're like Finland light Switzerland. So I just wonder a little bit about those teams. Russia versus Finland, though. I don't think Finland's getting any love whatsoever. I think they've got a sneaky really good team. You could make the case, Tyson, and everybody listening, that Finland has the next best player in this tournament after McDavid and McKinnon and Alex Barkov. I don't know if I would make that argument, but you certainly could say that he's the third best player on the planet right now in terms of his all-around game and what he did with Florida on their cup run. Then I mean, it, when they're healthy, I should say. Like now, they're just decimated, and it's going to be ugly for them. But they have a 1-2 punch of Barkov, Aho. Russia has basically no centermen right now. All wingers, all goalies. Could work, but I like the more balanced approach that Finland has there. So I think, like, if you were to just say who are the four best hockey countries in the world right now, I think it's the four that are playing at this tournament. Not to mention, Finland has had oodles more success in international play and picking up medals and trophies and the like than Russia has over the last several years. So, yeah, I'm all in on Team Finland there. They might surprise some people over these next few days, even with the injuries they've got. So, thanks for the question there. I guess censored name. Very good.
Yes.
All right. Well, hopefully we can give some credit to these last two questions here, Tice. Who's up next?
This next one's coming from at Frank Saravelli's number one fan.
Okay,
who's going to be the sneakiest trade deadline pickup in terms of cost and how effective they are?
All right. Saravelli Stalker, thanks for the question. I would go with here is a guy that might not even play anytime soon. But that's Yanni Gord of Seattle. He just underwent, I think it was just like a day or two ago, he underwent sports hernia surgery. And so the reason why I say sneaky deadline pickup is that, I mean, you take away the guys that are going to get like a first round pick and all that, you know, the high-end guys at the top there. But Gord was kind of on the edge, you know, a few weeks ago of being one of those highly sought after pieces. And I think he's got a lot more to show than he's done in Seattle so far. But I kind of, should I tell the story about buying my house? Okay. So bear with me here. But I kind of look at this Yanni Gord situation like me when I purchased my new house just about a year ago, where when I walked into it for the first time in a viewing, there's no really delicate way to say this, but the overwhelming stench of cat urine filled the air as I opened the door. And a weaker person might have thought, this smells like cat urine. But I thought, this smells like opportunity. And it may have took a couple months and a couple dollars to get rid of it, but I got myself a pretty good deal. And I kind of wonder if Yanni Gord is like the fixer-upper house here, where you can buy something where the bones are solid. It just needs to, right? It's got to come together a little bit here. His timeline injury-wise, he might come back right around the deadline. But like, who cares if he doesn't? If he comes back in late March, great. He's got a few weeks to get back up to speed before the postseason. And you might pick up a centerman, wins faceoffs, plays all situations, Stanley Cup pedigree, knows how to get it done, can play with skilled players. At what? The cost of a third-round pick now? Because he's going to have that injury baggage. So I kind of wonder if he might end up being the sneaky deadline pickup that everybody looks back on and says, oh, we had our chance there and we kind of blew it. So I'm going with Yanni Gord, Tice.
Well, last up, we got a draft question. It's never too early to look at the draft.
Never too early.
This one comes via email as well. It's from Horrible for Hagans. So I know where this user's coming from. But if you're the Sharks, Hawks, Preds, whatever team wins the lottery, would you target Matthew Schaefer or James Hagans with the first overall pick?
Ooh, I like that. I love draft questions, and I love hypothetical draft questions even. All we needed was a mock trade there, and it would have been my hockey wet dream. All right. And those are the three teams, I guess, that are in the bottom three right now. Sharks, Hawks, Preds, something like that.
Yeah.
I think Seattle's kind of in and around that too. I'm a pretty fervent believer of best player available no matter what. When it comes to pretty much any sports draft, it's just so hard to predict 3, 4, 5 years into the future. Like, some prospects stagnate, some explode onto the scene. Some guys want out, some guys want in, opportunities come, they go. So that's why I just think 90%+ of the time, that's the way to go. Don't overthink it. Out of those teams, Sharks, Hawks, Preds, Chicago might be the one that I might say, maybe forget BPA for a second and get Connor Bedard a little bit more help up front. That might be the one team. And they drafted Lovshunov last year, second overall. They've got a few other guys in the pipeline there. But that might be one situation where I could maybe be swayed into thinking it's more important here that we get a little bit more help up front, grab a centerman, then you have a little more options with Bedard. Hey, maybe he can go out in the wing for a little bit, or maybe he has at least a running mate down the middle if we want to stick him at center long term. That might be the one team where I'd be like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on BPA. Other than that, though, I'm just not overthinking it. Even with San Jose, where they've got, you know, in theory, Celebrini and Smith as the 1-2 punch there. Celebrini, Higgins, and Smith sounds pretty juicy. And you've got Dickinson that they drafted there last year. You know what I mean? So that's – and look, I mean, the Penguins kind of did a similar thing when they went Crosby, Malkin, Staal. And that worked out pretty well for them in their first cup. They trade Jordan Staal, and they didn't win a whole lot for a long time. So, right, it's not the worst thing in the world to go heavy on a certain position there. But the interesting thing quickly here as we wrap this up, maybe it's not necessarily Schaefer versus Hagans or something like that. But I guess what's more valuable, a top-line center or a top-pair defenseman? That's kind of an interesting one to get into there, where it's like, let's think quickly here. Jack Eichel, for example. Would you rather have Jack Eichel or would you rather have Zach Werenski? I'm thinking like, you know, trying to stay away from McDavid versus Makar, but it's like the fifth best at each position, something like that, right? Oh, man, that's a toughie. I think I'm going center, though, if I had to pick between the two. It's just so rare for Stanley Cup winning teams to not have that number one beast up front. It's borderline mandatory. Like, if you look back, maybe the one team, I think maybe Carolina and then maybe Anaheim. But even then, the Hurricanes had, like, Eric Staal had a 100-point season that year. And Anaheim had, it was like young Getzlaff, right? He wasn't quite superstar Getzlaff, but they also had Andy McDonald, who was like an 80-point guy in the dead puck era. But you can point, and while you pretty much do also need a number one D, there's a lot more teams you can point to and say, oh, they didn't have a guy. They didn't have a guy. They didn't have a guy. It's few and far between, but I think I'm going center over defenseman. If it's an even grade and I got to choose the position, I think I'm going center over defenseman.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I think center's the way to go. I mean, even and you look at that Carolina team that won too. Who was their best D-man?
I don't know. No. Yeah, like they had Francis Cabrelet, Nick Wallin, Mike Commodore, beauty, Aaron Ward. Not necessarily murderer's row of defensemen there. But that's a great point that you can kind of, again, you don't want to, but you can get away with it. Maybe that's a question for another day. Somebody ask it, and then I'll look it up. who's the worst number one center to win a Stanley Cup? And I bet the dude's at least a borderline Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It might be like the 95 Devils. Could be any of the Devils teams, actually. Maybe that's the... But then again, yeah, okay. I'll look into this. I'm curious now. I'm still going center over defenseman, but thanks for the question there. That's a beauty. I love that. Great way to end this one. Kind of shake things up a little bit from the Four Nations tournament as we wait for the NHL regular season to commence. And then when we get back at it, well, we'll see what storylines and narratives have emerged from the Four Nations tournament. And if it's any indication of what that first game is like, maybe we'll have some fireworks to discuss when we get back at this thing next week. But until then, thank you all so much for tuning in once again to this episode of the Hockey Mailbag. As always, really appreciate getting to hang out and talk puck with you beauties. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you ever want to be a part of the podcast, just send your questions to hockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter @Brandon_Rewicki. We'll be back at it next week, Thursday morning. But until then, I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. We look forward to talking puck with you guys real soon.